we work for a lot of companies and agencies and so forth throughout New England, and our experience is that probably two-thirds at least of the work that we're doing right now is really focused on nature-based solutions. So I just wanted to say, I think that's really encouraging.
Great.
Kevin, I would agree with you on that. The other thing I found interesting, and I asked the question of New Haven, because as you're looking at their project and you're looking at the nature-based solutions with their greenways and things, one of the things I was looking at is that, huge complex. And I'm like, what about, having green roofs and to, to pick up a lot of the moisture that rainfall and things like that. And, there's a lot of, buildings in New Haven. And can we, can we look at that and take advantage of that in order to, absorb some of the rainfall?
Well, I think sometimes these, we're working on a project in Rhode Island right now, and it really revolves around the voluntary displacement of 155 homes that are repeatedly flooded. And a lot of the land that these homes currently occupy is going to be turned into basically green space of different kinds. And so, here's an opportunity both to improve people's lives by assisting them financially in terms of moving to other locations, and in this case, the locations they would rather be due to the flooding, but at the same time, convert land that used to be flooded into something that's usable for the public. So it's a great example of how, these co-benefits arise if you sit back and give it a little bit of thought.
I think we had that with Plainville in Connecticut, an example of a community that some of the homes were, taken down, and that land was moved, made, it was floodable. So you took these properties out of that floodplain.
Thanks. Amy. Yeah.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, Kevin, because a couple of questions that came up in my mind when I was listening to both presentations had to do with opportunities to work with private landowners. I'm assuming that in both cases, the work that was done both in Meriden, or is proposed to be done in Meriden, New Haven, or on city properties, but was wondering, and Denise kind of alluded to this as well, about engaging with private landowners, and even to the extent of whether or not, and I guess this is more of just a even if not in those two cases, just generally speaking, if eminent domain is something that comes up when we're talking about that, you would reference voluntary, purchase of or sale of homes for, that would then be torn down and replaced with natural areas. But I'm always interested in the opportunities for public-private partnerships and how either NGOs or just private landowners themselves can be engaged, and if they are being engaged in this type of planning.
Well, to be honest with you, we certainly support that, but it's not because we have a choice. I mean, as you can imagine, landowners, particularly those, whether they're lower or moderate or higher income folks that are near the water, tend to be folks who are proud of where they are, even if they're struggling a little bit with flooding. They like being on the water, and they're very, generally speaking, they're very engaged population. So the work that we do, I hesitate to say always, but almost always dealing with public interest groups of various different kinds, because they get to their elected officials, and they, of course, are property owners wherever they live, and so they should have a voice. And so we're routinely dealing with the public and all the work that we do. And we're not just doing it here in Connecticut, we're doing it throughout New England.
Yeah. And believe me, I'm just want to make sure for the record that I'm not suggesting eminent domain is something that we prefer to see happen at all. I was just wondering if it does happen in your experience, if certain of these areas have to be condemned for that purpose. And then there was one other follow-up question that I had, and that was just, again, getting more into creating the riparian buffers, habitat restoration, and living shorelines. Again, just wondering where private landowners are coming in on these projects, coming into play on these projects, and how much involvement there is.
I see Brian's hand up. I don't know if you want to react to those questions, but I also see Denise. So maybe, Brian, if you have a specific answer to that one.
The project that we're working on now, the one that I just spoke about, there's only two landowners there. The city owns about 60% of the property, and the Hanover Towers owns the other 40%. So I've only basically got one landowner that I'm dealing with. But the section that we're doing, that we're constructing now, that's further downstream, that's almost entirely on private property. So we need to get access agreements from like 30 or 35 individual homeowners in order to get on the properties to do the construction work. And, you know, most of them were happy with what we were doing because it's, you know, it's an improvement over what was there now. But, you know, some of them needed some convincing as to, you know, we're the government. Nobody likes the government. You know, a lot of what I got was, well, you know, I talked to you know, a young couple, you know, they're about 25 years old, had a new baby. And I talked to him, oh, this is what we're going to do. I went through my whole spiel and he just kind of looked at me with a blank expression. I was sending it. It was, okay, great. What's in it for me? And I said, well, at the completion of the project, you're not going to be in the floodplain anymore. And he was like, you know what? I'm paying $300 a month on flood insurance. Do whatever you want. Just come in here and do it. So, I mean, it's in the interest of all of the property owners to get the work done. It's just a question of, you know, how do you address it to them to make it so they realize that it's in their best interest.
So Rebecca, go ahead, Denise. Yeah, and can you say your affiliation for us, Denise? Thanks. Yep.
Thanks. I'm Denise Savageau. I'm with the Connecticut Council on Soil and Water Conservation. And I also just retired as the town of Greenwich, from the town of Greenwich, as the conservation director. So, and worked in the Emergency Operations Center and on all their FEMA grants. So I'm familiar with a lot of the work that was being done. So the question I had and what I was looking at is, in both instances, what's upstream? Are we looking at just fixing the flooding and taking care of that through, even though we've got some green infrastructure up there, what are we doing from upstream, making sure we don't create more impervious surface? I'm looking at what my definition of green infrastructure isn't limited to that stormwater stuff that EPA promotes, but that it's also about forests and wetlands and all of those natural areas. So I just wanted to make sure that as we're talking about that, we need to look at what we can do upstream so that the work that's being done downstream, where you do need to possibly take some, you know, hard infrastructure work being done, but how do we make sure that, hey, you know, in the future, we don't allow more development upstream that makes that not function the way it should. So I was kind of looking at those kind of questions. And then I think there's some real interesting discussions to have about the design work when you're talking about the, and this is the one particularly, you know, in New Haven, that coastal and inland water interface is really, really challenging. I laud the work that they're doing and really looking at that. But I would be interested to find out like what kind of analysis was done where they're putting up the flood wall and what does that mean then for other communities? So is that going to impact? What was the relationship there and how do we figure that out? So, you know, I'm looking at some of these as we move forward, what are the good things that we're seeing with these designs? And then my last comment is these are both in commercial areas. And I understand that those are pinch points in communities, but along the coast and in riverine systems, we have a lot of, you know, housing and whatever that also needs to be addressed. So I just want to make sure we don't forget that there's those pieces because sometimes they're one or two little properties at a time, and how do we address those?
I thought I had Tyler Archer from Shipman. You had your hand up on Nofu. You're all good?
Yeah, I just had two comments. I think they both kind of go off what the last two speakers have said, which is commenting on the upland. You know, I think for Denise, that's a big deal down in Greenwich. Obviously, you're kind of at the bottom of the chain. I live up in the northwest corner and, you know, when, you know, we're in a riverine valley and a river valley here. And when we get heavy rains, you know, parts of our downtown flood and residential neighborhoods flood because of the river that runs through town. And, you know, I think, you know, probably the most extreme example is what happened in Vermont after Hurricane Irene, you know, Vermont is not a coastal state and they deal with flooding issues that, you know, that coastal communities deal with regularly. They get on a, you know, an irregular basis. And that's something that up in, you know, the Northwest corner, the Northeast corner of Connecticut and, you know, down the center too, has to think about it. It's uncommon, but it shouldn't be forgotten. And I think, that should, you know, to echo what Denise said, that needs to be included. And I think, you know, a lot of that is on residential land. And as a, you know, as a land use attorney and environmental attorney, where we see residential owner, property owners are encouraged to do things as part of wetlands permit or, you know, construction on site, things like that. There are ways that the municipality can put in certain conditions or, you know, bond closure requirements that that they put in certain riverine buffers or, you know, things like that, a meadow, you know, something to keep flooding at bay from their property. That's something that can, you know, doesn't require